Well, the coaches will be sharing more in the, you know, the opportunity to, whether it's the coach's challenge or certainly some decisions that you get to make based on where face-offs will be placed. So we like that idea. We like the idea of sharing in that. It will improve as technology improves, as we can get the video faster on the bench and make decisions faster. So in that gray area, there's going to be lots of opportunity to talk about missed opportunities to challenge. But at the end of it, the league is trying to move closer and closer to a model. But what is challenged is clearly obvious, and what is not obvious isn't challenged. So it's a bit punitive if you're wrong, and then that way they can shave. And it's happened on the bench where you've made a call that there's no cost to it, you're looking to buy some time, and all of those things will kind of slide away. The other changes about face-offs and giving the offensive team the advantage, I like all of them. So a lot to process. We're going to spend some time this summer trying to figure out how it will manifest itself in the game. But it's certainly an interesting time.
Do you think your centerman would make that call about which side, or do you make that call?
So we're going to – it's a good question. So both are, but the head coach gets to make the call, right? Because the function will be of who their center is, right? So if they don't get to change, you're going to pick up who's taking the face-off. What might get interesting is you see people that don't take a lot of face-offs start, right? So that they're on their strong side. So you've got a right-handed centerman, but it's in the left corner, but you got a lefty over there that can do it. What mitigates all of that is the change I think you saw when they put in the rules on face-offs and really kept those centermen apart. We started to see more and more centermen go to their strong side, right? So if they were on their weak side, rip it to the boards. Go to their forehand is a better way of explaining it. So that now is going to be the key. They'll have their centermen on the ice. If it's the corner that I want, it's going to be on his wrong side. And I'll put the best centerman that I can on that side of the ice or against him. And we have that information on the bench, and certainly with the iPads, it's more and more ready. And it'll get to the point that the centerman, the guys on the bench won't ask you. They just know what you're gonna do. You'll know what that hand is. They know what they're, it's like a line matchup already. You know, your best right-handed guy's taking all the ones in that corner. It'll be good.
I remember last year when we talked to you at the draft, you had said that you actually didn't watch much of the Stanley Cup final. It was still too raw. Did you watch a lot of the playoffs this year? And what do you make of what the Blues went on to do after you saw them?
So I thought it was the exact same series over and over again. Resilience, tight games, not necessarily domination through the series, but domination at times, great goaltending. And that would be the painful thing. It was the same series over and over. That each team that they beat were right there, but not quite good enough in the end. I would say that I did not cut or mark the final. I do that in August, so I don't have to watch that.
Recurring nightmare, though, again, to a degree? Or is that
you know what?
Strong?
Almost the opposite. My mood's almost the opposite. So the nightmares came the day after and the week after. And then you go back and watch the series again. They're two really good teams, went real, real hard at each other. You go through the analytics in the 5-on-5 chances generating. We were slightly better in 4 of the 6 games. The painful part is we like game, part of game 2, but 3, 4, and 5, big chunks of it we liked, and you could still walk away losing a series like that. Didn't love the way we played in game 6, so that hurts a little bit. But now I've moved on because it was a reoccurring thing. They were just a little bit better than the teams that they beat. And in the areas that they struggled with, they were able to rebound the next night. I mean, our game 4 against them was pretty, I know it's an overtime game, but it was a pretty dominant performance. And so were the next 2 periods. And they found a way to stick around. So they earned it. That resilience to me would be what I saw in series with them by shift. I wouldn't say they sagged, but they got beat sometimes, and they were able to come back and get back to their identity game.
And that's why it's probably a bit of a fool's game to try and rewrite history. A lot of fans would say, if they held on to that 2-0 lead in game 5,
yes,
maybe. But St. Louis was down 3-2 to Dallas, right? And they won 2 straight games.
It's the truth. If you hang on to that lead, if you win that game, you might have won the Stanley Cup. And there will be 15 teams that have the exact same storyline in there. If in the third period of Tampa against Columbus, they have the comeback. And the statistics will tell you there's a really good chance they would have in that period. They may easily run the table for the rest of that series. So that storyline is, there's a breaking point in every series.
Yeah.
sometimes it's overtime game seven, and sometimes it's not. But there's a point, and all of the teams that get beat fail on that storyline.
Right.
Does that make having them on the ropes tougher to swallow? Like having a team on the ropes like that, and you just
No, but that's, I don't know that I would agree with that qualifier, because it's 2-2, right? Like they were never in desperation mode. I mean, we're at 2-0. If that game goes to 3-0, if that puck doesn't get pulled out of the net, right? Yeah. You're going, there's the nail. But you know, Shannon's A comes back on Vegas from down. You're never out of it until you're out of it. So, what could have been is a fool's game. Well, there'll be 15 of us doing that.
But does it ease the sting at all, or put a new light on the fact you guys lost to the Stanley Cup champions, as opposed to a team that went 4-0 really quick in the next round?
I'm not sure. Is it ease it or make it worse? Right. So I got beat. That would be the third time for me.
That you lost.
Detroit, it was in the finals, so that,
right,
that hurts. We got beat 4 straight by Pittsburgh in 2009, the year they won the Stanley Cup. That was coming off back-to-back 7-game series, and they were just way better than we were.
Cup finalists.
You know what, I'll tell you what, if you're going to get beat, you want to get beat by a good team that beat you in a hard series. That's a fact.
Sure.
We lost, so we look at all of the negatives in our series and say the things they won, we get to talk about the Stanley Cup champions. So you look at all of them.
Right.
And it felt that way for quite a while, and then we take our step back, I'm more excited now, maybe going forward, than I was this year last time. I'm still growling about that one. Because the reality is we're not that much older. That the door wasn't closed on that. Yeah, there's a bunch of teams that are going to have cap constraints, and there's a reason for it. They're really, really good young players that have produced and are going to get paid. So we're all going to go through that.
So did St. Louis teach us anything that maybe we didn't know about a sports team and what it takes to be successful, or are they just living out the old adage of, you know, it's not always the most talented team on paper? And
Well, they've certainly introduced a new rallying cry in the National Hockey League for the next 30 years. There's going to be, every team, there's going to be a 31st and soon a 32nd place team at that point in the season, and that coach has given that speech.
We're not out of it.
There was another team exactly where we were, boys, and they won the Stanley Cup. So that's good for 30 until the next generation comes through and they forget St. Louis, they forget about it, right?
Yeah.
That one is living for a while. No. We're all using it.
Can I ask you, is the second part of the narrative, we got a goalie in our system that nobody really liked until they came to the NHL and then he won the Stanley Cup first in 4 months. Is that going to be... Yes.
So the human nature says we normally don't do a lot of things that haven't been done, right? The first risk taker, and they weren't the first risk takers, but the payoff was glaring, right?
Yeah.
So now the idea then, you will not be criticized for pulling a goaltender out of nowhere and putting him in on a good team. So unusual team, right? The question wasn't how did they get to be so good, it was... Boy, their start was, how were they so tough? They had a tough start. They weren't a great team. They were a better hockey team, clearly, than their start. If you put a young goalie in that environment, there is a truth to the game is easier for some people at the NHL. I can't tell you who all those guys are, but the reads come that are more understandable. At times, after you get a little bit of experience, it becomes a physical thing. Are you quick enough to get over to get that shot? But your experience lets you get to that peak. So a young guy doing it's unusual, except some players come in and the game's used. They go to the American League and they can't figure out what's going on. It's not sorted. It's not, and remember we're spelling sorted right here, right? Not you. No, that was not you. That was not you. I said it was a sorted game, and he thought I said sorted.
It was
a really well-organized game, and then I got killed for it. So I'm clear about that. So some guys pick that up quicker.
Okay.
And that might have been that. But you know, Philadelphia has the other story because they had so many, but they got a young guy that came in and almost changed their season as well, right? They went on that incredible run. We're watching the Flyers to see if they're going to make it down the stretch. There's questions on whether they're moving these guys or not. Mm-hmm. The young goaltender had a lot to do with it.
So, Paul, you've talked about the coaching fraternity and how you guys do get together and share ideas. Has what Craig Berube done almost maybe
raise the bar to an impossible level for other coaches, because there was a team, again, they were dead last, wow. but it's also been well reported. They were fractured. They were at each other's throats in practices. Yeah. They were ready to blow it up. And then he comes in and somehow soothes. You talked about having yeah. to soothe some ruffled well, feathers. Did he do that? And how?
I don't know in the league. I know their game got better. I know the night that Patty Laine scored 5, we could have scored 12 from that right. slot. And the next time we saw him, we got beat 1-0. I still liked our game in that game, but we got beat 1-0. And the goaltender would be the one quick answer that's more important than anybody. But clearly, the man deserves all the credit that you get when you do what he did. They were a veteran team in a lot of ways, veteran drivers of the team that had almost, maybe the extreme of their season was one of their benefits in the end. Things were so bad that when they got a little bit of life, a little bit of a reprieve, right?
Yeah.
Starting to feel good. You get to come to the rink one day and, hey, we won 2 in a row. This feels good. They ran 11, right? They won 11 in a row. So, you know, he did a marvelous job.
What was your reaction to the Trouba trade this week?
Well, not surprised. You know it's coming. You know, we're getting to that direction. I like Jake. I think it's tough. The tough part is you feel like you've invested in a player, especially a defenseman, because they take a little longer to get their feet wet and to get comfortable, and now he's in his peak and he's prime. But this challenge is a function of, we got a bunch of really, really good players who are young, that produced at a young age, and their numbers say they're going to get paid, so not everybody gets to stay. So I like Neil, who's coming in. I like his game. He skates and he can get to the puck first, and he's not afraid. He'll go back and get it. I think he's going to fit, his style of game is going to fit specifically into what we need with the other defensemen we have back. And we're still filling out that lineup right. on the back end over the course of the summer. But we like him as a lot for the person that he is and the style of game that he plays.
As of right now, would Pionk be a candidate to play with Josh? Or do you think Dustin goes into that slot? I mean, I know you have a lot of moving parts on the back.
But, you know, Ken, the only way that can be properly answered is if you understand the other names.
Okay.
Right, you truly can't say, I'll give you more general. Absolutely, yeah. Right, based on style, and when you look at the first 3 quarters of a season, he's playing with Mark Stahl and he's playing against the other team's best. You know, when you talk to their coach, he's complete comfort doing that. So that's a possibility. Or you'd say, well, with that skill set, are we better off matching him with someone else so that we have a little bit of depth kind of in checking on both pairs?
Right. There's always some level of uncertainty, but the back end could really be in flux based
Correct.
On UFAs and RFAs.
I mean, yes.
Do you just have to be patient? Or, I mean, you've been through this before, obviously, but I mean, what's it like to have a bit of a players in pencil on your whiteboard rather than ink?
It can be exciting. You know, when you didn't get to where you wanted to get to, but you think you're moving in the right direction, a little bit of a change is a good thing. You know, keeping the core together for a long time is a wonderful idea, but if it's beyond the core, you know, I just remember Detroit always kind of bringing in 2 or 3 of those older veteran guys toward the end and being hard grinding, and they brought some hunger. We're still a real young group. A little bit of change can be a good thing. So I'm excited about it now.
On the idea of change, Paul, any thoughts as to anything else that might change? Would you look to add to your leadership group as early as this fall, or you're content with what you have there?
Yeah, you know what? I like our room, and I like the people that are building in it, that next layer of leadership right. that we've got coming in. I'm big fans. And I'll miss some names, but you, Josh Morrissey and Adam Lowry coming into a time where they can hold a room with a comment and they can impact the game with their play. It's not just, it's a direct involvement. They're on the bench. The guys watching them play know these guys are key pieces.
Right.
So much of leadership is based in age. As you get another year in the league, you get a little experience. You have your difficult challenges that all teams have, and you learn to handle them, and that's leadership.
Staff, you always reassess as a staff too, or are there some things, do you think you need to have any philosophical changes, or will you have to change your demeanor and how you deal with players at all? Or
you change? I'm not ready to change the grip. We hit the ball down the fairway an awful lot. Had one go in the water on us in the playoffs. I'm not sure I'm changing my clubs or my grip yet. We're a pretty good hockey team.
Kenny appreciates the golf analogy.
Yes.
And
right
I don't play, so I get to use it, right? Because the next thing is how good your grip is. I don't know, I don't play.
A couple hole-in-ones.
There you go.
And is this weekend any different for you than, say, a year ago when you guys didn't have the first pick? There's maybe a lot of things in motion that weren't necessarily in motion a year ago. Does it change your role at all here?
I'm more aware of where my phone is. There's more, but there's a bunch of, the Coaches Association is more involved in this week for us, and the clinic that we ran yesterday was outstanding.
Right.
Really, so that was an all-day event kind of thing. In terms of relating with management, you're always available. Yes, you're having more conversations because there's more things in play.
Right.
But unless you're doing a trade, there's not much for the head coach to do at a draft.
Sure.
You know, you shake a lot of hands, you're slapping guys in the back that you really want to beat bad. You like them, you have some fun, you get together, but off trades, there's not much for us to do.
Because you know the market, it hangs on every word, that ruffled feathers comment on the exit day. I mean, any more just thought on that?
Which one was that?
What were you talking about? There's some ruffled feathers we have to smooth out sort of when we come back in the fall, which some people, you know, took to be a number of things.
It was at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the bigger context on that?
Right. I mean, everybody didn't like how the season ended, right?
Well, no, we're all growling.
Right. So will time just heal all wounds in that case? Or?
Well, you don't want them all healed. You know, you want to bring a little bit of that pain back to you. You want to keep some of that. So, you know, sour is a better word. Everybody, when you think, whether you're right or wrong, but you think you're in that mix of teams that are good enough to win and you don't, it hurts like hell. The last thing you want is everybody coming back happy the next year. That was good enough. You know, the golf season was longer. That's the exact opposite mindset you want. So,
looking back,
maybe I just made it.
Did guys come in last year happy just because of the success of the year earlier?
We're 33-16-2 at the end of January.
Yeah.
We played very, very well. We lost our big dog on the back end for half a season. Because of our Finland trip, so these are factors, not excuses.
Yeah.
The back end of our schedule was very heavy, a bunch of trips to the West Coast. It was really difficult. And we were playing playoff teams. So we were running a little better than 500, I think, in that stretch, which related to our earlier is not very good. But when you're running against playoff teams and you play a game over 500 against them, you get to win the Stanley Cup, right? So the hockey was better, and it was a hell of a series. And we didn't win. The idea that it should be easy, it shouldn't. It should be exactly that hard. So when we lose, we go home, we're growling, we grind our teeth, and then you get to the draft and you get a new young face that doesn't care what the score was in the last game. He's going to get drafted by the Winnipeg Jets in the first round tonight. You turn the page and move forward.
Just speaking of the schedule, home openers were released earlier today. And
yep.
I saw Jacob Trouba tweeted that someone must have paid off the schedule maker. Good sense of drama given where you guys are going to start the season. What do you think about that? That you guys go right onto Broadway, you know, Madison Square Garden first game, Brendan Lemieux, Jacob Trouba, Neil Pionk.
The old band back together. So that'll be, I think it would have been a bigger story if it happened in year and we hadn't seen him.
Right.
Because it's still the first game. The bigger story is it's the first game of the year and we're in Canada, so we have to win that one.
Yeah.
Or there's the rest of the year. So there'll be bigger stories around it. But I think by now, we've probably got somebody on just about every team at this point, right, you're running into. The first time you run into them, it's a big deal.
We talked a lot about defensive commitment last year versus the year before. Do you think that was still a big factor this year? Or did you like the way you played at the end? Or was that improving? Some people would argue you played better defensively in the playoffs maybe than in parts of the year.
Well, we would have, exactly. But I liked our defensive game better two seasons ago than last season, for sure. So when we're talking about, you look at all these analytics, you're not talking about a big amount of numbers, right? So if you're talking about D-zone nuggets, it might be one a period. And over the course of the year, that'll move you from being not very good at it to being elite at it. You know, one a period on two or three defensive metrics, and it gets better. If you take your big dog off the blue line for half the season, there's your one a period almost. So I didn't love the way we played defensively for the year with Morrissey and Bufflin out. That's part of the factor why our game wasn't as good. They come back and you say, hey, boy, you're playing a better defensive game. Well, I hope so. Right? If Dustin at the time's our highest paid player and Josh Morrissey's a brilliant young defenseman, we're going to miss those pieces. And when they came back, we were a better defensive team.
How far along are you on the best practices of what you do every summer? Have you identified
three
some
quarters?
Yeah.
Probably. I've got down to the area of of most focus, shift of most focus for training camp, and we'll just put video to it.
Can you share your top priority going into the year? Or
just get better.
I don't know how well you know David Quinn, but do you seek him out at these coaches' meetings to talk about Neil?
Yes, so I'll go find him.
Yeah,
sure,
find him.
Because he said, I like Brendan Lemieux and I like Jacob Trubik, and I know he's going to want the coach's opinion. And then once you get a relationship with somebody, you're going to get really good feedback. But we're almost all honest, because you're going to get that player on the ice. And if I give him bad information, he'll say, what's Paul Maurice thinking? So we're honest about the assessment, and I like both those guys. So it was a positive kind of, this is how we used him, this is how we saw him, this is where he was really good, these were areas we're trying to make better, and then he gives you that back, and then you get to do basically your job is make players better. So we talked about Neil and how he used him, and then, you know, right through to injuries that he had in terms of how it affected his play, and because I go back and watch quite a bit of video on any player that we trade, either before and after for sure, and I'll have questions, why did you take him away from Mark Stahl here? And the answer isn't about Neil. It's another injury, so we had to shift. And so you get that kind of information, which is really good.
Has that evolved since your time in the league, the coaches' camaraderie?
Maybe for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, nobody had talked to me when I was 28. True story. My first draft, and I told Daryl this story the other day. The coaches' meetings, which weren't very friendly, like it was a long affair. Everybody's at the back having coffee, and I don't know anybody, right? So I sit down, and Daryl Sutter sits down beside me, which is, I'm still not far off from being a really big fan of everything, right? So I'm thinking it's pretty cool. And he takes me through almost the entire Hartford Whaler season. The guys got off to a real good start, tough in November, a couple of injuries, and he's in the other conference. And we're not on TV very much. This is back in the Jumbotron days, right? That was you got a VHS tape of the Jumbotron feed. There was your video. And then you learned how smart these guys were. So that would be my moment of the first guy that really talked, and we talked hockey. So now, you know, Pete DeBoer is one of my very best friends. Ralph Kruger is one of my very best friends. So there's a bunch of guys in the room, Kevin McCarthy, that I worked with for a long time. So you have a close relationship, and over time you do make enough connections that you can pick up the phone and say, hey, tell me about this guy, tell me about that guy. I've watched your team play. How are you doing this? Why are you doing this? And after a while, and the Coaches Association has made huge strides, and finally, maybe over years, figured out that the real thing we need to do is work in conjunction with the National Hockey League and be a partner in what we're doing. And I thought this weekend for me with that association has been the best since we've been together.
Just one last one from me, Paul, and I won't ask you about any of them specifically, but just as a lump sum, you said your excitement level maybe was greater this year than it was a year ago. Is how much of that is because you still have players, Sami Niku, Tucker Pullman, Christian Vesalainen, Jack Roslovic, who have yet to maybe make big impacts at the NHL level, but seem to be on the cusp of? And right. Do you foresee another step or two for them to take, you know, as a group?
So there's two, you know, it's that good luck is hard work meeting opportunity, right? Jack is a perfect example of that. Last year was his first full NHL year pro in the NHL. So we all have a higher expectation of him. We'll be able to use him in different. So he's going to get a little bit more opportunity to play. And all of these young players that are going to come in are going to want that opportunity, right? When they show up, they think they've earned it. Then they figure out they got to earn it to get it. And now they're moving. So the young players got to come in and steal somebody's ice. It's up to the veteran guys not to give any of that back. But we do. We still have. Gotten kind of almost younger each year, but still gotten better. And now some of these really young guys aren't quite as. Nick Ehlers moves into a spot where he's not a real young guy anymore. Patty's got a few years in the NHL. If he plays the way he did in the last 6 weeks of the season, we're not going to have just a special shooter. We'll have a big, powerful man. So that's the growth that we expect out of all our guys.
Kopp and Roslovic both be under consideration for center? I mean, last year we talked about center. Did you consider Jack there? Or do you see Jack being better on the wing, or Andrew maybe better at center?
We want to put Jack in the position that he gets to his maximum potential, right?
But
you're always looking to develop centers if you can. So that's it. So the answer is both. I still think that he can play center in this league and be very good at doing it. We want to win games too, so we don't want a 60-game run where he's at the middle where we can do something better with our lineup. And there may be more opportunity on the wing than there is at center. Who knows?
Yeah, what about Andrew? Andrew, you like him at center
Andrew
also?
Copper speaking?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like him both. Like, his game evolved in both positions, so that when we moved him back to center, we kind of felt, well, maybe now he's a better center, and he got kicked back to the wing, and he was outstanding. So we either or, I think he's going to get himself into a position just in minutes, that there has to be more minutes for him because he's that effective, Andrew. So I don't know that we're running him at center in that situation.
How much comfort do you have, Paul, in the fact that Soussois and Hellebuck, your two goaltenders, in back-to-back years?
Well, so we haven't asked, one question about our goaltending, which is really important, right? That would be the question you don't want to talk about, is who's your number one goalie this year, and who's your number two? Mm-hmm. So we've got really good goaltending there, and really happy that Lauren made that commitment to come back. He was very, very impressive in his year with us. His personality, his work ethic, his compete, and that balance. One of the things that we challenged here in Winnipeg is our schedule's unusual. We have a lot of unusual travel, and having a guy that can go in and win games in the backup's critical. Yeah.